You're listening to the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast, where we discuss advanced strategies, tactics, and tips for actually selling your music. If you'd like to learn more music marketing strategies, then go to musicmarketingmanifesto.com. That's musicmarketingmanifesto.com, and sign up for your free copy of the Music Marketing Blueprint. All right, this is John Ojaka, and today I've got a really special guest on the line with me. Her name is Kat Parsons. She's a singer-songwriter, and I asked her to join us today to talk about Kickstarter, because Kickstarter is certainly in the news, if you haven't already caught wind of this, because this week, indie artist Amanda Palmer has gone and raised a whopping $1,192,793 to fund her upcoming album, art, book, and tour. And Kat is also an artist who has had some success with Kickstarter, so I reached out to her and thought that she could offer some pretty cool perspective and that she could also tell you how she did it, maybe give a little more insight into the process for the average artist who is considering giving the whole fan funding strategy a try. So Kat, welcome. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for asking. I'm glad to be here, and what a success for Amanda. That's so awesome.
I know. She's been someone, as you know, I've been paying attention to her career for, I don't know, maybe 6 months, a year now, and I just find her incredibly impressive with everything she's doing, not only as an artist, but just in terms of her marketing. She's really out there. She seems to, I don't know her personally, never spoken with her or anything, but she seems to really be kicking some ass and just doing very, very well. She's always coming up with something innovative. She's extremely engaging with her fans, and she certainly does have a history as an artist, and she's got herself, from what I can tell, a very large following and big email list, and she was able to capitalize on that and raise, like we said, nearly $1.2 million, which is incredible. I'm a little fuzzy on what the records are. I had heard at one point it was around 500,000, and then when this happened, I was reading everywhere that she set the all-time record, even saw some quotes from Kickstarter, but then, as some people pointed out, there's somebody else out there with a video game company that seems to have raised $3.3 million, so I'm not really sure what's going on there, but from what I can tell, she certainly broke some sort of records, and at least in my sort of circle of awareness, I've not seen any independent musicians do anything close to this, so it's really impressive, and I thought we'd talk about it. So why don't we start at the beginning? You can give a little background on yourself and talk about why it is that you turned to Kickstarter to ultimately try and get the funding for your album, which you successfully did, by the way, right? You raised how much money to fund your current project?
All in, I raised just shy of $20,000. I did $17,727 on the Kickstarter website. And then I also did a fundraising concert in LA where I live and perform regularly, and raised about $1,800 that way, and to a total of $19,561.11.
Right. Yeah, that's obviously a lot of money as well, and I think most people listening to this, you know, could do a lot with that budget. So that's pretty cool. So you know, like I mentioned, why don't we start at the beginning? You can give a little background on yourself as an artist and talk about why you chose to turn to Kickstarter as opposed to going the more, you know, conventional route, either coming out of pocket or raising the money through investors, record labels, etc.
Yeah, well, I would say it was kind of a choice of necessity. But this is actually my second time doing something similar to Kickstarter. In 2005, I ran my own campaign before Kickstarter websites, and there's also Pledge.com, which also does a similar service. Before they were around, I just ran it through myself, and it essentially just laid everything out in a few emails to my fan base and sent them out, and raised about the same amount, about $18,000, in 2005 for the recording of one of my albums. And then this time I decided to go, now at this point, now there are all these websites that assist in making it a really fun process. And so I went through Kickstarter to do this fundraising. But I think it's kind of the new model for musicians. Instead of a label that's just giving you an advance or, you know, a benefactor, you kind of have a school of benefactors. It's like, not to compare myself to Mozart, but it's like the composers of the old time had a group of people who were supporting their art. So I think it's kind of neat because it puts the power into the artist's hands and also the hands of the fans who want to hear that particular artist's work.
Very cool. Yeah, no, bringing up that benefactor point is, that's a good one, because I know, and we'll get into that a little more later, there are sort of mixed attitudes about the whole fan funding thing, but that is a good point. Why don't you give anyone who's not familiar with Kickstarter a little more background on how Kickstarter works, what the platform entails?
Sure. So, I am a singer-songwriter based out of L.A., and I forgot to answer your first question, which was, who am I?
Right.
And I do a lot of touring across the world. And what Kickstarter is it's a platform where you can create a project, oftentimes on a page of Kickstarter, and you can create different reward levels for fans to participate in making your project happen. So in relation to an album, say you want to record an album, then you would have rewards ranging from as little as $1 to as high as you want. For me, I did $15 was my first reward package, up until $2,500. And it's fun. You can be really creative with the rewards. You know, people get albums, or you can, I had a lot of people who I called to sing happy birthday to this last year,
right.
Just kind of different reward levels. And all of that helps fund whatever it is that you've set out, whatever your project that you've set out on the Kickstarter website.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure if that was a good description, but hopefully
you got
them across.
No, definitely. And, obviously I'm familiar with Kickstarter, but I haven't personally run a program, so I've never been behind the scenes in their dashboard and seen how it all works. I've just kind of experienced it as a benefactor, someone who's donated to various artist campaigns. And what would one assume the benefit is of using Kickstarter versus doing it yourself? I presume that they essentially just create a cool platform that gives you a lot of tools and takes care of the entire administrative process, or there's some other benefits there?
I chose to do it in Kickstarter versus myself because, yes, it takes care of a lot of the administration, but also because a lot of, what you talk about in Music Marketing Manifest, so in terms of urgency, and what Kickstarter does is they have a tally and a countdown on the page of your project. So people can see how much you've raised, and they can see it in real time as it goes up. And the kind of cool thing that Kickstarter does is, if you don't, it's scary when you start the project, but I think it really helps with people supporting, is that if you don't reach your financial goal that you set forth for your project, then you don't get funded at all. And so there's kind of this excitement of fans checking to see, did you reach your goal, and how far are you now, and what more do you need, and how many days are left? Kind of, it makes it very, very interactive as far as everyone kind of being able to know this project that they're a part of, how close is it to coming to fruition and reaching its goal.
Gotcha. And just a quick heads up there. I don't know if you backed away from your headset or not, but your volume changed there a second ago. So if there's any way to get closer, maybe. There you are. You're back. And that you brought up a really good point, because that is probably one of the biggest cons that I hear people talk about, is the fact that if you don't raise everything, then you don't get anything. And there, like you've touched on, there are other platforms out there, and you can technically conduct something yourself using, I presume, something like PayPal donations or even just a standard order buttons.
Yeah, and that's what I did earlier with the PayPal donations.
Gotcha. And why did you make the switch, out of curiosity?
I made the switch because I couldn't create the platform with the tally and the constantly changing with the countdown, the constantly changing thing. This was before I took any of your courses, so I didn't really know how to do that kind of stuff. And
sure.
I figured the amount I would pay for someone, a web designer, to help me with that stuff will equal the amount of fees that are taken from Kickstarter. So it just seemed like I was going to make my life a lot easier.
Yeah.
Not to add another hat on top of all the other hats that, you know, we all try to wear.
Sure. Yeah, I think that is a good point. I'd probably go that way as well, just to remove those headaches. And but there's also some other points as well. Kickstarter does now have authority out there in the marketplace. People are familiar with it. I think they're relatively comfortable with it. There's also that the pro of that whole, you know, if you don't raise anything, then you don't get anything. There is a fear, like, what if I donate X amount of dollars and you don't get enough to go and make that record? And then, you know, what's going to happen to my donation? With Kickstarter, that's the reason that they require a sort of all or nothing funding, is so that if you know, you're not able to get the money that you need to accomplish your minimum objectives for your project, then the money does not go into your pocket, so that no one essentially is ripped off, so that nobody is stuck in a situation where they've donated and you don't have the funds to go and deliver on your promises. There's also, when it comes to fundraising, quite a few laws out there and put in place by the FTC that can be a bit scary when it comes to fundraising. And I've talked to a lot of musicians who had plans to go out and do something like this on their own, and just from what they showed me, their choice in language made what they were doing literally illegal. And so that is another nice thing about Kickstarter, is that you know, by working within the confines of their sort of legal structure, you're not going to accidentally use the wrong language and suddenly get yourself sued by the FTC.
So, well, in addition to that, also by donors, because if you, say, are raising money for an album and you're doing it on your own, unless you have documents that everyone's signing that says this doesn't mean you own a part of this album, then there can be, I mean, unlikely, but there can be repercussions as far as someone, if an album then goes on to make a lot of money, then this person will may come back and say they have points in the album because they've given this much money for the album, et cetera. Whereas I think Kickstarter probably protects you more from that, just with its basic guidelines and rules.
That's a really good point. I actually never considered that. Yeah, if you were running something on your own, as most people would, they tend to be sloppy with terms and conditions. No one wants to go and pay a lawyer several thousand dollars to draw anything up. That's usually the reason they're avoiding Kickstarter in the first place, to save on those fees. And if you don't have that language, you're absolutely right. Somebody could come after you down the line and say, wait, I'm an investor. I own a piece of this. So that's a really good point. So when you set out to do this, what was your goal?
Financial. My goal was 15,000.
Gotcha. So you can absolutely go over your goal.
Yes, definitely you can. And I mean, I think Amanda Palmer also went over her goal. I don't think it was that high.
No.
And oftentimes when you get funded, you do go over your goal. I don't know. I mean, yeah.
Her goal was only $100,000, from what I understand, and so she.
Oh my gosh!
Way over her goal. She did state, though, that she was trying to raise $1 million. That was the big push, but obviously she didn't want to be in a situation where she couldn't use any of the money, because presumably she had a sort of scaled down version of what she wanted to do. She wanted to release an album, release an art book, and go on tour. And certainly one can imagine that she could, you know, go on tour and stick to just a smaller number of cities and still pull it off with $100,000. And her album, if I understand.
Yeah, there's definitely.
I'm sorry?
Sorry.
Oh, no.
I was going to say, there's definitely a lot of flexibility once your goal has been met to let people know, okay, well, actually with this goal, that means I could come to this place and this place. And so it makes it appealing for those people to continue to give. So there's still a lot of flexibility for letting people know what you could use the additional money for, and if they believe in what it is, or if it means coming to their cities and, you know.
Sure. Yeah, I was going to ask, do you think that there is psychological pressure or lack of pressure at play when you ask for X amount of dollars? Let's say you ask for $10,000. Once you've hit that, do you think that your audience in general kind of cools off, regardless of, you know, the emails you might send, say, hey, keep donating? Do they cool off thinking that you've already got your funds and you don't need my money? Or do you think that's not a factor? I mean, how much, having gone through it, how much sort of did you take that into consideration. The, geez, I want to set this really, you know, high so that I get maximum amount of money, but at the same time, I don't want to set it too high that I get nothing. Or did you just honestly look at the numbers of what you really needed and then set your prices there?
Well, as a musician, you can use whatever you get always for things.
Sure.
So there's an endless amount of stuff you can spend money on that would be beneficial and legitimate for your career. I don't know the answer to that question. I would assume, you know, my common sense would say, oh, once you reach the goal, then people don't care as much.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly that wasn't the case. With Amanda Palmer, it wasn't the case with me. I outraised my goal, not by, you know, the same percentage, but so I don't really know the answer to that question. I imagine it has something to do with how much people want what you're giving. So
sure.
If the rewards are really good, and they're a far greater deal than they would be once the record is made, then people are going to keep buying them because they want the rewards, not to help you, but because they want what you're offering.
Right. I think that is probably one of the important and often not discussed elements of the whole fan funding model. I think it's most beneficial to pitch this as selling insider access to an artist as opposed to begging for donations. That's definitely probably the second biggest thing I see come up. Certainly, I wrote a big blog post on this, as I think you know, on the Music Marketing Manifesto blog recently, and there was a ton of discussion, and you know, next to those fees that they take, which, what are those fees again? Amazon and Kickstarter takes fees. Don't they amount to about 8-9%, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, when I did it, Kickstarter took 5% and Amazon took 3-4%.
Gotcha. So that was the biggest reservation that people had. But then the next was, and there was a huge array of opinion on this, but some people felt that it was begging. And I'll be honest, my feelings on Kickstarter for a long time was not so much that it was begging, but just from a marketing standpoint, as someone who does a lot of traditional marketing that has nothing to do with music, you always want to position yourself as an authority, as a leader of your tribe, not as someone who needs a handout. And that was, so I was kind of against it, to be honest, and I didn't think that it was really right for me. But going through, and I had never really paid attention in detail to anyone's Kickstarter campaign. It wasn't until Amanda Palmer did her thing that I really started watching what she was doing, paying attention to how she was pitching the whole project, and it really didn't feel like that at all. Part of it was because I think the number was so bold that it was exciting, but she really just created a lot of really interesting rewards, and you felt like you were getting in on something on the ground floor, that you were a part of it. I donated money. I wanted to, I had two motivations there. I wanted to see the process unfold, from an inside perspective, but I wanted to be a part of this really cool, newsworthy event, you know, this artist raising this monumental amount of money. But she did it in such a way that you never really felt that someone was asking for a handout, but rather they were doing something really cool, and they wanted, you know, she was inviting her audience, her army, so to speak, to be a part of it. What are your feelings, or what were your feelings on that, that aspect?
Yeah.
Surely this is something you considered.
Yeah, I have strong feelings about that too. I mean, no one feels good about the begging situation. The person who's begging and the person who's giving. I mean, there's this really funny spoof on Kickstarter type campaigns of people from Portlandia that were like a really bad project, and their dad is just sitting at the computer and donates $25,000. This is like, you know.
Right.
I don't think that feels good to anyone. I just don't think one should position themselves that way. And so, yes, I think it should definitely, what the goal is that you're giving something to people who want what it is that you're giving. So your rewards, I think, have to be better than they would be after the fact. So offering something for cheaper or offering something special, that can range from, like I mentioned, singing happy birthday, calling people to sing happy birthday to them. I did some Skype video chats with people where I would play two of their favorite songs, dedicate songs to people. I covered Some people got a reward level where they would choose a song for me to cover, and I went into a studio and did an acoustic version of that song and then signed it and sent it to them. It can also, people coming into the studio for an hour, taking someone out to dinner. If you're a woman, I recommend doing that with a friend. But there's all sorts of really cool things that people, that you want your audience to be excited about it. So it's not like you're asking for a handout. What you're saying is, look at this cool opportunity that we both have. This is something I want to do that I can't wait for you to have. And here's how I'm going to make it worth your while to get it and have to wait for it.
Cool. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the rewards, because that's kind of the fun part of this whole process, and it is sort of, it's what makes this whole thing sort of newsworthy and interesting on a case-by-case basis. I mean, what were your rewards? Because I know they ranged tremendously in price, starting at was it $10, $15, and ranging up to a few thousand dollars? Talk about the different things you offered.
I think it was 15, and I'm looking at my page now, 15 to 2,500, and, they range. I think that if one is going to do a Kickstarter campaign, it'd be worth kind of surfing around the site and seeing what other musicians are, because people have some really fun ideas of ways to involve their fans. But some of the things that I did were what I mentioned before, also advanced copies, kind of for the lower pledge levels. It can be advanced copies or digital downloads or exclusive songs. For those who follow kind of the insider circle, a lot of stuff that you would do in a limited time offer is stuff that you would put in your Kickstarter campaign. Special, rare, limited edition kind of things, or one-of-a-kind things. If you're also an artist, making a book, hand painting something. One of the cool ones that I've seen other people do, and I did in mine, was writing a song for someone or with someone. So they're going to be a part of this creative process. In fact, I think I've heard of someone who did a whole album of songs that they wrote for and with. They sent questionnaires to the people who pledged at a certain level, and the person filled out this very detailed questionnaire, and the artist wrote a song about however that person had filled out their questionnaire, and then made a CD of all of those songs.
Gotcha.
So there's lots of cool stuff, and it would be worth checking out Amanda Palmer's for sure, as well, because I'm sure she has some really creative things that people want and are excited about. You think about people just who are not involved in the arts but like to be a part of it. Just think about what you would want, what you would want from an artist that you like, and what would be cool.
I'm looking at this as we're talking. I can't even count them fast enough. It looks like there's over 25 different packages that she's got here, and they start at just a mere dollar, and presumably she's doing that so that everyone can be involved, whether they have a lot of money or not, and that will get them the entire album and a bonus song. So, that bonus, like you're talking about, it's more value than they would get if they just waited until it came on the market, and presumably less expensive because those start at just a dollar. And for $5, you get that plus a digital download of an art book that she's put together. And again, I'm just kind of scanning this. I might be missing a few details here and there, but this is the gist of it. You go up to $25 and you've got a physical version of the CD and the art book. $50 gets you a vinyl copy of the album, plus I believe the other stuff. It jumps up to $100 and you can get all that stuff signed by the artist. Skip way ahead. We're up to $300 for, what do we got here, vinyl arts and crafts signed art book. There's just so much stuff. What's the big, you get a surprise gift with that one, as well as a ton of other stuff, but it literally goes up to $10,000 for various packages. I'm trying to find, here's one, there are two backers for $10,000 packages that include an art sitting and a dinner. So in other words, she has dinner with you and paints your picture, if I'm not mistaken. And she's got two backers on that. 34 backers pledged $5,000 for basically a house party where I believe she comes and plays your house solo. So, I mean, that, you know, that, and that's huge. 34 people taking her up on that $5,000 package. You got 72 backers taking up on her, $1,000 package, where you get a limited time, or sorry, a limited edition signed. It looks like a photo book by Neil Gaiman and Kyle Cassidy. Neil Gaiman is her husband, and a well-known writer. And anyway, it's just really interesting. And you had some pretty expensive options as well, did you not? What were some of your high-end packages?
Yeah, my highest end package was $2,500, and that was, you know, dinner and a song and all of the rewards kind of build on each other. So in my case, every reward included what was in all of the rewards previous,
mm-hmm.
plus other things. I don't think you have to do that. That's how I did it.
Sure.
And so kind of the big, and the house concert, which actually I'm going to play next week, and stuff like that. So I think the more generous you can be, the better results you'll have. So, you know, talking about the Amanda Palmer thing, that's so cool that for a dollar, she offered all of that.
Right.
That's fantastic. That's a lot of value for $1.
Sure.
So the more generous you can afford to be, and of course, you know, it's tricky because we can't always afford to be generous. As we're trying to make a living doing this, but I do think that that does create a good feeling, and you usually get paid back in full.
Sure.
For generosity, I think.
Sure, and I can only imagine it really strengthens the bond that you have with your audience when someone has taken that step and they've truly invested in you. I would imagine that you know, that impression is not going to go away anytime soon. And you've basically got yourself not only a fan, but on some loose sense, almost a friend for life, because they, you know, you've communicated, you've sent them, you know, this material. They know, you know, they've sort of made that psychological commitment that they believe in you and that they want to see you succeed. They want to see you put out that product. And I can only imagine that that's 10 times stronger than simply going out to a record store and picking up an album one day.
Yeah, and mine actually, my Kickstarter campaign was a little bit different because it wasn't actually for the recording of the album. It was for the release of it, the manufacturing, the artwork, the kind of advertising, PR, all the kind of investment into what happens after the album. I think we as artists sometimes blow everything on the recording and then we're finished and it's like, okay,
sure.
Now what?
Sure.
So this was kind of for that process, the post-album process. Although I would say that my audience didn't really understand exactly what the money was going for. I think ultimately they probably, most people came away with thinking that it was to record the album, which
gotcha.
Is fine. It's
sure.
you know, a similar thing. But technically what I had set forth was for the promotion of the record. Of
sure.
CP. And also I think it's interesting because mine was a series of three pieces that I'm releasing over this year. I've released one of them so far. The first reward just talks about the first EP. And I've already gotten a bunch of people who say, man, I really wish I had done a higher reward level. I can't believe I was stupid and, you know, didn't get all three EPs or whatever.
Right.
And so I think the closer you can do the Kickstarter campaign to when you can deliver the rewards, the better.
Gotcha.
Because then it makes it real for people. You know, if it's like, in a year, you're going to get, you know, this. It's really hard for someone to, or at least for me, to be, you know, if something's in a year, to have that kind of urgency or desire.
Sure.
Whereas if it's, you know, next month, you're going to get the recording before anyone else does,
right.
then that's going to you're gonna be a lot more excited for that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Backing up a tad, we're talking about those larger reward packages. What was the largest package that you found a backer for?
$2,500.
Okay, so
and,
you did find a backer for that big package.
Yeah, I did.
That's great. That's very cool. I think that's probably, you know, I don't know if everyone's wondering this, but I've always wondered this, seeing these go down. You see these big packages and you kind of, I think, quietly wonder, okay, are these genuine fans or are these people that the artist knows that are simply donating to be supportive? I mean, you want to let us in on that?
Yeah, for sure. Is it my parents or not is what you want to know.
Basically.
My parents donated $125 total. No, actually, yes. And in fact, one of the people who did the high packages, the $1,500 and $2,500, I had met at a gig the week before. So it really, you know, I had no idea that this person would have the financial, be in the financial situation to do that. When I met them, they actually did buy 8 seats. So maybe that was a dip off that they liked my music.
Sure. That's awesome.
But yeah, those are genuine fans who I've met playing. Both of the largest ones are from playing live shows that they've seen.
That's great.
People who I've met while playing live. Yeah.
One of the things that sort of got under my skin, and it happens pretty much every time I put out a blog post outlining someone's success story, is, you know, I'm flooded with a mix of feedback in the comments, many of which are, of course, very positive and supportive. And there's just always this huge percentage of people talking about how impossible it is to succeed and pointing out all the caveats to someone's success that essentially in their minds disqualify it. And I find my audience to be a really positive audience compared to some of the sites. I saw some other posts out there. I'll leave the sites out of it, but some other big music sites that reported on this, and just the amount of negativity, you know, everything from bashing Amanda personally to the more common claim that, you know, it's only because she has a large following and, you know, therefore no independent artist should sort of take this seriously. And, you know, obviously it's because she has a large following. You know, there's... You can't dismiss someone's success success with a strategy as not being valid because they're successful. I mean, people are successful because they use successful strategies. And one of the things that, you know, really the crux of everything that I'm teaching with Music Marketing Manifesto and the Insider Circle you know, probably until my dying day, everything that I put out there is it's all about that list. Any artist can drive traffic and build a mailing list. You can tour and do it as well, and you can make some really impactful personal relationships that way, but it's expensive and not everyone tours or can for various reasons. But anyone can drive traffic on the internet and replicate that process and build relationships using all of these tools that we have online. That's what I teach. That's what I do. That's what I know you're doing now, and it works, and it works well. And we see conversion rates on par with the same conversion rates we see at live shows. This dismissiveness of her success because I don't know what her mailing list is. I feel like somewhere I might have picked up that it was in the couple hundred thousand range. That is just so doable. Yes, it's hard. Yes, it's going to take some time, but it is something that only we've boiled this stuff down to such a process that it's just a matter of doing the work, taking the time, or spending the money if you want to shortcut it to drive traffic to that opt-in form and give away a little bit of music so that you can build a list and then build a relationship and then call upon them for things exactly like this. So certainly the scale of Amanda Palmer's success has to do with the fact that she's got a long track record. She's got a large list. Again, I'm assuming all of these things. Don't know the ins and outs of her career at all on any, you know, personal level. But from what I've seen, she busts her ass, makes great relationships with her fans. She's always doing these spontaneous, you know, Twitter events where she'll just show up in a park and hang out with her fans, and those types of things at the very least. I don't actually know if she's ever done that, but you know, I'm hearing about all these sort of spontaneous thing, you know, shows and things that she's she's doing. And it is that effort that she puts in that has led to that big list, and that big list, that big fan base, is what has made something like this possible. But we can all do that. If you only have 500 people on your list, you can still get donations, you know, in relation to that list. Obviously, you're going to get, if you have 500 people on your list, you're not going to get 500 people donating. You might get 10 people donating. And so you need to set your sites accordingly. But, you know, you did pretty well. I don't know if you want to talk about it. Do you want to talk about list size or keep that private?
Sure. I'd like to talk about it vaguely.
Sure, go for it.
So just in response to what you were saying, I think one of the things that I'm trying to learn is not to let the past predict the future. So as musicians, we try so many different strategies. You know, okay, well, you know, this show is going to be huge, or, you know, blah, blah, this is going to be it, or this thing is kind of going to be what it's going to be that's going to make it grow in a big way. And I think that it can get overwhelming, and we do face a lot of rejection as musicians, whether that's, you know, hard, you know, concrete rejection, or just a lack of interest or whatever. And we do need to keep going throughout that. I mean, everyone faces rejection. There's no one who doesn't. And so I think as a musician, when we see other people who are succeeding, we really want to figure out, you know, how did that person do it? That's one of the things that I really like about your method, is that it is a how, whereas oftentimes, I know for me, when I've looked at other artists whose careers I really admire, I say, how did they do it? And there's this kind of mystic haze over how they did it. And I think that's part of the music business, is that no one has figured out or had figured out a way of concretely how to do it. That's why there was not a way that the labels always did it, because there wasn't a way that it always succeeded. And with Amanda Palmer, it seems to me like a congruence of a bunch of different things that she's done really well. And I think if you have a small list and you're comparing it to 200,000, or if you have a Kickstarter campaign and you're comparing it to 1.2 million, that maybe there's somewhere else to start. Because when you start with that comparison, it does feel so overwhelming. You know, how are you going to get it there? But I really like the idea of kind of picking a thing and working on that, and having smaller goals instead of chasing each theory. I know for me, I have wanted to try a little bit of everything, you know. Oh, I want to try doing this that I saw someone do that seems successful. And I want to try to do this that I saw someone do that seems successful. And we each have our own strengths. And so I think one of the important things while we're doing music is to realize what our strengths are and kind of slow it down and focus on a particular thing at one time, as opposed to kind of spreading yourself thin and not really doing a good job at any of them.
Right.
So anyway, I forget what your question was.
It's interesting. If you can correct me if I'm wrong, I was just sort of doing some math here with a calculator and looking at your backers on your old project, and it looks like you got, from what I know of your list, I don't know exactly what it was at the time, but from what I can piece together, it was about 6% of your list donated. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I actually haven't done the conversion rate, but that, I mean, sure, yeah, that sounds right. I had a larger list at the time before I moved to a different hosting company, and through the cleanup of my list and the move over, I lost a couple thousand subscribers. So I did have a little bit of a bigger list at that time.
Gotcha.
You know,
Well, if that's the
which
case,
would mean the percentage is even less. Yeah.
right. And you know, I want to talk about conversion rates just because a lot of people, and I was one of them, have a lot of misconceptions about what's normal. You know, you get people that have a list of 1,000 people and they think they're going to sell, you know, 800 copies, and that doesn't happen in any market anywhere. You know, of most markets, when it comes to marketing, consider a 1-2% conversion rate pretty decent. You know, on the average side of decent. But we're seeing people who have a pretty good handle on this stuff in the insider circle, maybe 4, 5, 6%. It seems to be about right. The best I'm seeing might touch on 10%. You know, I've heard of people having conversion rates over that. And again, a conversion rate just means the percentage of people that take the action that you want them to take. So if you had a list of 100 people and you sent out a "Hey, buy my album" email message, and 5 of them bought it, then your conversion rate would be 5%. Just to sort of clarify that. But 6% is really good, actually. It's very good. It's far above what most marketers are getting, and I'm very in tune with what's happening out there. And you know, music being something that is even more difficult to sell than the traditional product, these are really good percentages. And when you know that, once you start to learn this process of direct response marketing that we're all engaging on over in this sort of music marketing manifesto community or whatever you want to call it, you start to see how scalable this is. You know, if you know for a fact that, let's say, 6% of your audience is going to donate some to your Kickstarter campaign, or going to come to your shows, or going to purchase from you, then you can work out your subscriber value, and you know what you can afford to spend to acquire new subscribers, and you can really scale up fast. And that turns this whole process, this music business or these music careers of ours, into real businesses and real business models. And I find that incredibly exciting because it's something that I could never accomplish when I was on the major labels, and it seems that they can't accomplish. To my knowledge, they're not functioning on those principles. They don't have any kind of equation where they spend X amount of dollars on advertising and typically see X amount in return. It's all based on this tipping point, creating so much market awareness that if a product has legs, it's ultimately going to catch on, and then they'll make their money back in the long run.
Right.
Whereas what we're doing is about spending X amount of dollars or putting out X amount of effort and seeing a predictable response in return. And it's interesting and kind of cool to see that that extends to even Kickstarter, that, you know, you're seeing donations on par with those same kinds of conversion rates. It really does seem, once you've got a good relationship with your market, that you can, I don't know, count on that conversion rate over and over and over again. And it's I don't know, it's cool
Yeah,
to
that
see.
seems like a cool way to be able to predict your how much you're going to ask for too.
Right,
I mean,
right.
if you kind of have a feel for your conversion rates, then you kind of know what figure is reasonable
Sure.
for what you're doing. And I think that is really important. I remember you talking to me about the conversion rates, and that was a big shock for me because I was also one of those people. You know, we're dreamers. We're
Sure.
musician dreamers, and we expect, well, doesn't everyone on my mailing list want to hear my new music? It's amazing.
Yeah.
So those conversion rates are really helpful because I think kind of knowing those facts, you don't get as discouraged and you get more excited about, okay, so this is how it works, and you know, this number is related to this number in this way, and so this is what I would need to do in order to get this. And I just think that's really, really encouraging.
Sure. And ultimately, you know, the point I sort of strayed away from is it addresses that kind of criticism slash concern that it only worked because she had a big audience. Yes, she was able to raise a lot of money because she had a big audience. You know, if you have a small fan base, you can't make $1 million. There's no
Right.
free money out there. You have to do something to get it. But the exciting thing is, if you just break it down into numbers, okay, you need a big list. Let's take that conversion rate and just kind of work with that. So how many people are we going to need to accomplish the goals that we want to accomplish? And then go out and take some actual action or spend a little bit of money to build that list. And it's really not that hard. So speaking of lists, you know, what Where do you think your donors came from? I mean, was it all from your list? Did you see anything coming from outside of that list? Does anybody browse Kickstarter looking for cool projects? Did you do any kind of promotion or advertising that, you know, was outside of just sending emails to your fan base and tweets to your, you know, social media?
At the time that I did it, I think maybe one or two people might have donated that were outside of Kickstarter. Otherwise, it's all my fans. And, you know, I've had a couple of fans' families who I'll see, like, the same last name come in through
Right.
several people. You know, they kind of get into it, and everyone wants to be a part of it. And so, yeah, it was all through my email list and through my concert that I gave. That was really a neat thing to be able to do, was a concert separately. And of course those donations weren't subject to the fees, but they also didn't count as part of my, you know, 15,000, so that if I hadn't reached it, that wouldn't have helped me
Right.
reach my goal.
A weird question. I wonder, again, you're more immersed in this sort of fan funding community, I presume, than I am. And I'm wondering if this is something that people talk about, if this is something other people even have thought about. It certainly has crossed my mind. Do people kind of set themselves up where, you know, if they're close, but they're not quite there, they just come in and donate $5,000 to themselves? I mean, is this something people
Yeah. Well, I thought of that too. I think technically it can't be in your name. It can't be a credit card in your name. So maybe if you have a really good friend
Right.
who's willing to use their credit card, I don't know. I'd have to research that, but I do remember wondering if that was an option for a fail-safe. But I definitely remember that I would have had to involve other people. It
Sure.
couldn't have been something that I could just do under my name.
Right.
Yeah, one of the things, based on what you were saying before, one of the things, so I really think, I had a friend who said she'll never record an album without it being fan-funded, because recordings just don't pay in the same way that they used to,
mm-hmm.
As far as people buying records, and with the downloads and stuff like that. It just doesn't make financial sense to spend a ton of money. And you don't have to anymore either because of the great strides in home recording. But I think this is the new way, you know, that this way you'll never be out recording fees. It'll just be, you'll be out, you know, your overhead won't include that.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I was kind of down on it basically forever until Amanda Palmer did what she did, and it was cool for the first time. And I'm not suggesting that millions of other people haven't done
it. Hey, you were down on it when I did it. Thanks a lot.
I didn't know you
young
when
man.
You did it. I did not know. I did not even see your Kickstarter page
whatever.
Until just the other day.
I felt your vibe in the universe.
No, but you know, like I said, I never really followed this. I'm sure thousands of people have done this in a cool way. I just kind of I guess I received a handful of emails from friends doing this and didn't like the way it came across. It did come always across as sort
yeah.
of begging to me. It never came across
yeah.
meeting with a, hey, I've got something really cool for you. And I think that's important with all marketing, with everything you're doing. You got to make it about, you know, it's that whole what's in it for them principle. And that applies to fundraising as well. I'm just not interested if
yeah.
you know, all someone wants to do is burden me with an expense. But if they want to invite me to take part in a cool experience, and like you said earlier, get something more than I would be able to otherwise as a result, then sure, I'll take part, especially when you get that sense. And I don't know if this is true across the board, but when I feel like an artist is really working hard and not trying to take a shortcut, but rather just trying to exhaust every opportunity that they have, then I respond to it. But when it seems like someone just kind of wants to take the shortcut and get you to pay for it so they don't have to, then it kind of feels like a turnoff. And it is all in that presentation and how you go about it.
Yeah, of course. I totally agree. I think you have to have I really strongly agree with what you just said. I think you have to have a track record. It can't be like, I want to go to Hawaii. And it's always been my dream to go to Hawaii, and I need $10,000 for the plane ticket. Well, that doesn't seem fair, you know, then work for it, you know. And that's the whole idea, is that instead of it being like, I want to make a record, it's more like, there's music I want to share with you. Do you want to hear it? If you do, here's some cool stuff and a cool way to hear it, and we can be a part of this together. Like, and it's not a magic bullet. It's not like if you sign up for Kickstarter, all of a sudden the money will appear. I've seen people who have created goals that were just not really within the reality of what was happening in their career and not been able to raise the funds. So I think it's really, it's really important to be thinking about what you're offering, because that's no fun or I don't like it if it. I agree. If there, you said it best. I'm just agreeing. I like to see a track record, and I think that's what I was going to say about the video. Kickstarter strongly suggests that you do a video, and I think it's extremely important too, because you're connecting with people and you're letting them know, this is what I've done, this is how I've worked, these are my past successes, these are my past achievements, you know, showing that you're not just, you didn't just wake up one morning and decide that that would be fun, but this is something you've really, you know, are dedicated to and have had success in.
Sure. I was going to ask you what advice you have for anyone who's considering doing this, but we've sort of touched on most of these elements, so I'll just kind of quickly recap them. I mean, throwing my own advice in there first, I would say make sure you have a base before you begin. I think anyone who's just going to go, you know, that has no fan list and is going to go and throw up a Kickstarter project is going to be disappointed by the results. You want to build a base first. In other words, get an email list. And, you know, you might be able to do a lot with social media, but I find email is just infinitely more impactful. But then you also touched on making a video just now and how important that personal connection is. You spoke about doing a live show, which was obviously an interactive element that you felt helped you. And you touched on having a track record and showing people that you have already been working on the project and it's not just some whim. You also talked about, or at least in our previous conversations, you talked about the time limit, how long the project, I have in my notes here, 30 days versus a longer campaign. You want to kind of quickly address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think they give you options for 30, 60, possibly even 90. I don't know if they've taken that away, but they recommend the shorter campaign as well. And, of course, you know, based on what you teach as well, that makes a ton of sense. A shorter campaign, 30 days is long enough. You don't want to be, you know, for 2 months emailing people about something. Kind of the urgency, the excitement dissipates over time. And 30 days is enough time for everyone to see the campaign. So I think the shorter, the better.
Cool. And can you go even shorter than 30 days, or is every project set at 30 days?
I think when I did it, it was 30 days. I'm not sure if there's any new information. And the different sites, you know, I mentioned before, Pledge Music also does the crowdfunding. And I know that they really work with the artist in creating the rewards and stuff like that. And the more you can get Kickstarter or whatever company you're doing involved, the better. It's just always nice. The more you can get anyone involved, the better, because it just creates synergy for what you're doing.
Sure. Let's kind of go over those resources really quickly. We're getting close to wrapping up here, but obviously Kickstarter.com is sort of, at least to my mind, the leading pledge platform out there, or whatever you call those things. You mentioned Pledge.com, was it?
Yeah, I think it's, let me just look it up. Hang on.
Now, am I remembering right? Is Pledge.com one of those ones that lets you actually keep all the funds regardless of if you raise enough? Or meet your goals?
I don't think so.
Oh, you don't? I know there are some platforms out there.
Pledgemusic.com.
Gotcha. Pledgemusic. And it's specific for musicians.
It's Pledgemusic.com. Yeah, specific for musicians. And I assumed that you didn't get any of it unless you got all of it.
Okay.
But I'm not sure.
Okay, yeah, no, I may have the site wrong. I know there are some platforms, if anyone wants to sort of dig through the wealth of comments and tips and information, they can go to musicmarketingmanifesto.com and find that post on Amanda Palmer. It's currently up on the homepage, although as new posts come up, that will cycle out depending on when you're listening to this. And you can, in the comments there, a ton of people mention other sites, and I know there are a few that allow you to keep the entire thing. I also was doing some research, and I found it's a WordPress plugin. If you've built your site in WordPress, it's a pretty confusing domain. I'll say it here, but I'll try to create an easier redirect. It's premium.wpmudev.org/project/fundraising. Again, that's premium.wpmudev.org/project/fundraising. And it's a WordPress plugin that essentially allows you to add these targets and add the different donations and kind of, I think it's semi-manual, but somewhat manually update your page so it looks and feels very similar to a Kickstarter platform. Unfortunately, they don't have a demo on their site, which I find odd. I spoke to them a little bit via email trying to get a demo out of them, and they didn't have a live one, which was very odd to me. They sent me some screenshots, and it looks interesting. And certainly it's a way to go for anyone who doesn't want to, pay those fees and wants to just do it all in-house. You can control things all on your own platform if you want to check that out. So that's yet another option for people interested in doing this. And then there's the good old-fashioned PayPal donation buttons. But, I know mm-hmm. for myself, I'd probably stick with a platform like Kickstarter just because of what you've touched on, the ease, the familiarity with the site, and also just so that I know I've got the documentation there, so there's no confusion about what a person is actually getting a piece of, and so that I don't accidentally, go and break a law and get myself in trouble with the FTC. Let's see, that is about it. Basically, why don't we talk about you a little bit? How can people, find out more about your music, check you out, check out what you're doing? Because, I've been following your career. Kat's doing some really cool stuff. She's busting her butt and getting out there and making some really good music. So if someone wants to learn more about you, where can they hear your stuff?
I have a squeeze page at catparsonsmusic.com.
You said that kind of fast. Was that catparsons.com?
No, catparsonsmusic.com, and I'm excited to be giving away a download from my brand new EP that just came out called Talk to Me, which is about the moment when you know something's wrong, but you can't figure out what, and they won't answer the question.
Gotcha. So Kat Parsons.
Belonging at that moment.
Gotcha. Kat Parsons music.com. And you can download some music for free, and you can take a listen to some of the stuff that is part of the. This is the album that you ran your Kickstarter campaign to ultimately use the money to promote and advertise, correct? And manufacture the product for.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. One of the three. So yeah.
Very cool. All right. Well, thanks.
There'll be two more coming out this year.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, thanks so much. we're stepping. We're actually talking from opposite sides of the planet as we speak. Kat's in Los Angeles. I'm off in New Zealand, and we're talking via Skype. So there's a bit of a lag if you haven't figured that out. And there's also, the audio often leaves something to be desired. But thanks, everyone, for listening. Thanks for your patience with these seemingly inevitable audio glitches that come up with Skype. But thank you, Kat, for joining us. If anyone listening has a success story that they'd like to share with our listeners, or if you have a question about music marketing or the music business in general, then please call 1-800-296-1406. That's 1-800-296-1406, and we'll include your question in an upcoming show. And once more, you've been listening to the Music Marketing Manifesto podcast, where we discuss advanced strategies, tactics, and tips for actually selling your music. If you'd like to learn more music marketing strategies like those discussed today, please go to musicmarketingmanifesto.com. That's musicmarketingmanifesto.com, and sign up for your free copy of the Music Marketing Blueprint. Thanks again, Kat, for joining us today, and thanks, everyone, for listening. You take care, and I'll catch you guys at musicmarketingmanifesto.com.
Thanks, Sean.
Take care.